Welcome back to America's leading higher education podcast, The EdUp Experience, where we make education your business. Hosts Dr. Joe Salustio, Elizabeth Leiba, and producer Elvin Freites bring you the brightest and most influential minds in higher education today. We explore innovations, ideas, and issues in higher education and beyond, and hopefully have a little fun along the way. Now let's get to it. This episode of the EdUp Experience is sponsored by MDT Marketing. MDT Marketing is a digital marketing agency with a vision of creating education, marketing, and technology programs that improve people's lives. Specializing in student nurturing programs, digital advertising, marketing technology, and digital printing, MDT Marketing's seasoned team is entrusted by higher education institutional leaders to develop personalized communication strategies that are compliant and highlight what differentiates their institutions. Learn more about MDT Marketing at mdtmarketing.com. Welcome back, everybody. This is the EdUp Experience, where we make education your business, interviewing the brightest and most influential minds in higher education and beyond. Always with me, keeping me straight and narrow with my questions, ladies and gentlemen. The Phenom, and I forgot to introduce you as the Phenom the last couple episodes, Liz. I apologize. You are the Phenom.
How dare you? How dare you? You better get it together.
I need to go back. I need to go back and get those presidents or whoever the heck we had on and get them to do it over again because of failing your intro. It's just
how dare you? You better put my proper credentials.
I'm telling you what.
In front of my name. Now let's keep it real casual. Let's keep it casual.
It's a long list of particulars now that I got to get through with you.
You're funny.
I'm telling you, this is gonna be a really fun and interesting episode for us, Liz. Mm-hmm. We have a great guest on the line right now. He is Dr. Bruce Cush, president at Ensign College. Bruce, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Nice to be with you.
We're happy to have you here. And before we jump in with the questions related to higher ed and colleges, how are you? How's your health and how is your family?
You know, we're doing very well health-wise. We've been spared any of the COVID stuff as far as the sickness. We have a son that's been affected by it. He was running a small business in Colorado and he had to close that. Otherwise, everybody's been healthy, and for that, we're very grateful.
The impact on small business has been unprecedented, as I sit here in California and tell you again that we're shut down almost completely. It's just an amazing time to be living in these times. But I'm glad that everybody's healthy. Let's talk quickly about Ensign College. Why don't we just get a once over from you what Ensign College is all about, where you're located, what's your mission, and give us the 2-minute elevator if you would.
Yeah, you bet. Happy to do that. So we are located in downtown Salt Lake City. We have been an institution since 1886, and our focus is primarily on preparing our graduates to go to work and with very current and in-demand skills. We are a faith-based institution. Our sponsoring institution is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. People would know it as the Mormon Church in some circles. We serve annually about 3,000 students. We have students from all over the United States and about 80 countries. About a third of our students are international students, many of them from Latin America. We have programs, we have certificate programs, we have associate degree programs, and beginning next fall, we will begin offering a limited number of Bachelor of Applied Science degrees. So we're really excited about that. We are, our name previously to becoming Ensign College in September was LDS Business College, but we do more than just teach business programs, but we have accounting, we teach social media marketing, digital marketing, we have medical assisting programs, we have interior design, a variety of about 25 different programs the students can come and study. They can come and do a short stint with us, get a certificate in a couple of semesters, or now they can stay and get a bachelor's degree. So we're not large, but we're in a great location, and Salt Lake City is a great place to live and to learn. So that's kind of Ensign College in a nutshell.
Yeah, I apologize for saying Ensign wrong at the beginning. I think I said Ensign, but it's Ensign, yeah.
Yeah, so an ensign is an officer in the Navy, and ensign actually is a standard. It represents sort of a standard or a banner sort of kind of connotation. And there's a peak that was named by the Mormon pioneers, Ensign Peak, that we can see from our building, and that was part of the genesis of our name change.
So I think the first question that I have, and I'm not going to make it a COVID-19 related question because I think we can all basically guess the answer that you're going to give, because it's not unlike any other university as they deal with on ground and online and so on. I think the bigger question for a faith-based institution right now is that there have been and continue to be a number of higher ed prognosticators that will come out and talk about failing colleges and fast failing colleges, particularly those that are faith-based, being most at risk. How is Ensign doing overall, expectation-wise, to your expectation and that of your trustees? And do you guys feel, how are you feeling? I mean, that's maybe a gut check kind of question for you.
No, that's a great question. So like many, and we have been historically a two-year school, and fundamentally will probably still be a two-year school, even when we start offering bachelor's degrees, as many two-year schools in the country are doing now. Certainly our enrollment took a hit for fall, but not as much as some two-year schools around the country. I think we're down about 5% this fall compared to last fall, and we're not sure what our winter semester, which starts in January, will exactly be like, but we're not seeing the enrollment trends that we would hope to see. And so that's a concern overall for sure for us. And it's an interesting time, a challenging time to figure out just what our messaging strategy should be and how we should attract our students. One of the great positives for us is that our sponsoring institution provides us the financial strength that is necessary. So we're not heavily dependent on grant money. We're not heavily dependent on philanthropic dollars to support us. And so our sponsoring institution is very generous in making sure that we're solid financially. So we don't have those kinds of worries. When I go to conferences or talk with colleagues and I hear some of the challenges, you know, they're discounting tuition, they're doing everything they can think of to get students to come. We're trying to certainly be very aggressive with our marketing, but our financial situation is very, very solid, and we're grateful for that. For example, we did not take any CARES Act funding at all when it was provided by the government. Instead, our sponsoring institution provided what we needed to get us through the spring and this semester. So that's one thing where I don't have to go to bed at night worrying about financial matters.
Yeah, and I mean, that's such a huge, huge item that would keep you up at night, right? The financial performance. And so for everybody who's listening, the Ensign's affiliated with Brigham Young, and so it's and the Church of Latter-day Saints, and so that it's almost like a consortium of sorts, right? Through the church. So you're able to resource, you're able to have shared services, you're able to pull on each other for advice, for whatever, to be able to operate, which is a big advantage. And that's one of the ways is we've had guests come on, particularly those in the M&A areas of colleges and universities, that consortial going in the consortium down its consortial path or having some type of affiliation or shared services agreement is one path towards being financially sustainable. And it sounds like you guys have that advantage, which means you could take your resources and time and go serve the students.
Yes, we can. That's absolutely. We are a very student focused institution, and that's what we're all about. You know, as a small school, as a 2-year school, we're certainly, you know, not involved with research and things like that. We are funded as a, well, we don't exactly operate as a system. We are funded as a group of institutions. Certainly there's, you know, budgets are looked at individually, but overall, all of the church institutions are funded in one, pretty much one budget allocation. So
it's nice.
It really is a great situation. I feel for my colleagues who are, you know, constantly worried about money, you know, in other institutions outside of our system, but you know, there's BYU in Provo, there's BYU Idaho, where I actually began my academic career, there's BYU Hawaii, and then there's us, and then there's the BYU Pathway Organization, which really is a pre-matriculated college experience that helps people get back on a track to take advantage of higher education opportunities.
You guys are in a really interesting space. I'm going to, by the way, I took my cues on questions I learned from Liz. So that's why my questions today are so good, because she trained me on how to do these interviews.
And but you're doing really well.
Well, thank you.
I wanted to make sure I give you that compliment.
You talked about finding jobs for students. And so there's this space that you're operating in. Let's just take, by the way, congratulations on moving to bachelor degrees. That's amazing. I want to just sort of take that off the table for right now for my question, as you're dealing with 2-year associate degrees and certificates. The demand for skills-based training, the question of degree value happening simultaneously. And so being in the space of 2-year degrees and certificates kind of puts you on both ends of that, versus being a huge institution where you're just offering certificates as a revenue generating activity to enhance your degree growth. When you're dealing with, and this is a little bit of experience because I was in the same space when I worked in the for-profit sector, dealing with associate degrees and certificates, I was selling as many of one as I was the other. So it was part of the program strategy itself, were certificates rather than just being an ancillary revenue generating mm-hmm. activity.
Yep.
So talk to me about that moment in time, or the how you guys position yourselves when it comes to value of a degree versus skills-based training, and how you deliver that to your potential students.
Yeah. So, you know, I spent a couple of decades in Silicon Valley before I got into academia. And it's a year and a half ago now, I gave a TEDx talk, two of them actually, one in Idaho Falls, Idaho, and one in Ogden, Utah, in March and June of last year. But I talked a little bit about our general philosophy and some things, you know, some studies I've discovered along the way. And there was just one, a couple that I came across the last couple of weeks. But there was one study that was done a few years ago that 96% of college administrators that were surveyed said they thought they were doing an adequate job of preparing their graduates. And in that same survey, only 11% of employers thought so. Mm. And, you know, every spring you read these studies and responses from employers about the skills that employers want that college graduates don't have. And so we are very, very focused on embedding not only technical skills, but soft skills. And I prefer to call them essential workplace competencies, you know, things like teamwork and leadership and problem solving and written communications and verbal communications, all that stuff. And my colleagues in academia are probably not going to appreciate this comment very much, but I think higher education is is not doing the job generally that employers want. Now, some schools may say, well, we're not, you know, we're not in the business of making employers happy. And I get that, you know, if it's research and other things. But there are a lot of employers out there that want to hire college graduates with skills, and they're finding that that schools aren't doing it. And so we're very much focused on that. We are teaching those things. We are measuring those things. We are embedding those things in our curriculum. And so we think that that is a value added. That's one of our strongest value added propositions as an institution, is the way that we prepare our graduates. And we're certainly not the only game in town, and other institutions are doing that. But we, you know, I get the value of a college degree conversation. I know that there are, you know, big employers, Google and Apple, and just to name a few, IBM. We've had conversations with some of these guys that have said, we're hiring for skills and not degrees. And we know that there's this rising generation, this rising feel of, well, is college really all that necessary? And, you know, I guess the answer is it depends. It depends on what you want to do, and it depends on where you want to head long term. We obviously still think there's great value in college education, and we embed industry certifications in many of our certificate programs so that when students finish with us, they are educated and they're prepared and they can articulate what they've learned, how they've learned, and what they can do. And so we think that's a pretty good combination.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it is, Liz.
Yeah, definitely. I love that you spoke to the workplace readiness, because I think as a faculty member and dealing with students, I think when I'm teaching a class, I'm always trying to give them that. Wasn't for me, I don't want students to feel as though, well, this is just, you know, another gen ed, because I teach English composition. So I'm always thinking about, as far as my topic, how does that fit the students' needs and how will they use those skills when they go out into the workplace? So I'm so glad that you spoke to that, because it's really, I think, essential, especially as we go into this new normal where students are going to be looking a lot more, and parents, myself as a parent of a college age student, looking at ROI and what they're actually going to be using in terms of those skills. Talk to us about your background. It's always fascinating to me, as someone that's spent majority of my career working in higher education, when someone comes from more of the corporate sector and has had a lot of experience in the private sector, how does that inform your leadership? How does that inform the way that you look at the vision of your college and what you're going to be doing moving forward? I thought it was refreshing on your webpage that you had on the site, so much communication, which I feel like that's something that is more of a corporate or something that more in the business world that we see, where it's very transparent. And I love that you had you were talking about you were giving some scripture and talking about different initiatives and things that you were doing and why you were doing certain policies. And it was very like, this is why we're doing this. And we had this particular communication, but now we're doing it this way, and very informative. And I love that. Can you speak a little bit more about that and how you think we as a sector need to adopt some of those types of principles that we see typically more in the business world, I think.
What is your marketing challenge? Are you pacing short for your start? Is your cost per inquiry increasing? From sophisticated software, multi-touch omnichannel nurturing to the latest in digital media, MDT will help your school captivate, resonate, and automate your marketing efforts. Learn more about MDT Marketing at mdtmarketing.com. Your marketing challenges end here.
Yeah. So, you know, coming right from Silicon Valley to the college classroom, I mean, I made a conscious decision to leave industry and the fast pace of high technology. And I wanted to finish the rest of my working life as an educator. I never expected to be a college president, by the way. I wanted to be a teacher until the day that I retired. And that's what I have loved. But you know, I kind of asked myself the question when I left industry and I got into the college classroom, you know, wondering why college wasn't a little bit more like work. Because, you know, think about the first day on a new job and then compare that with the first day of most college classes you may have taken. You know, a new job doesn't come with a syllabus, and it doesn't come with a textbook, and it doesn't come with a reading list, and it doesn't come with a list of the papers that you're going to be writing. Mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, when you come to work every day, you're not given a quiz to make sure you've done your homework. So if work isn't that way, why is college that way? And during my time at Brigham Young University, Idaho, I got a PhD in instructional design. And so there were some things very much that informed my thinking about what the educational experience should be like. And so that my pre-academic life has very much influenced my academic life in terms of what I think an education ought to do for the students. And again, because I come from the business world, I suppose I have a bias towards making sure that when students leave, they're prepared for the world that they're going to go into and that they're ready for work and that they have those essential skills. And so we've created an instructional framework that is very immersive in terms of immersing students in a discipline and a subject from the very first minute of the very first day of the very first class. So imagine walking into an accounting class and you're given a shoebox full of receipts and you're told, welcome to your lives of the accounting department of, I don't know, XYZ cookie company. And, we've been a little short on accounting help. So we've been just keeping all of our receipts and bank statements and stuff in a box. So now figure it out. You've got to create last quarter's financial statements. And so the students start looking through all this stuff. And before too much longer, they know what all the financial statements are, and they're creating those. And so they learn accounting by doing accounting. And in that case, and an interesting little sidebar is that, well, this is probably about a year and a half ago, we got a picture from one of our students who went to work, and on her chair was a great big box full of receipts for real, like a real thing. And her boss said, yeah, here's all this stuff. Would you please figure it out? She knew exactly what to do because she'd already gone through the shoebox experience. So, we expect students to take responsibility for their learning and to help drive the learning experience and to, help craft how they'll learn, what they'll learn, how they'll demonstrate mastery, and even some cases, how they'll receive a grade in the course.
Love it.
And, and students will say things like, I love this because I own this.
Yes.
In this class, I'm an actor and not an object. In my other class, I'm just an object and I can't hardly stand it. I'm learning things I never thought I could do before. And so the self-confidence, the grit, the agility that students develop in this environment for us has been quite remarkable. And some of our students, when they go to other schools, there have been a few students that have gone to other schools, and one of the first things they've done is tried to lobby the academic guys at the new place to teach there like we teach at Ensign College. And of course, that doesn't go over very well, but it's really effective for us. In fact, 2 weeks ago now, we were recognized by our regional accreditor, the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities. We received their 2020 Beacon Award for excellence in student achievement and innovation in learning and teaching. So, we think that we're doing things that are really helpful for our students, and that's what it's all about at the end of the day.
Absolutely. And I love that concept of learning by doing. How do you think as a sector we can be more, and yourself of all the experience that you have, in the business world, and you said kind of like the students kind of like were going to the next level of their study and saying, hey, I wish you would teach like this. How can we get higher education to be more receptive and embrace some of those concepts? I think one of the things that frustrates us, and myself and Joe talk about a lot of time, is there is so much of a focus on theory and so much of a focus on things that students will absolutely never need to know. You might need to know a little bit about the history of your subject area, maybe a little bit about the theory, but you mostly need to know how to do your job, and that's what they're going to require that you do. How do we get higher education to pivot away from such a focus on some of the things traditionally that we have been focused on and look at some of the more workplace ready skills? Do you have any tips, or just from your experience in Silicon Valley as someone that was in the heart of being in those companies that were employing students that were coming out of some of these maybe traditional schools, how do we get the sector to be more responsive to what the employers really need?
You know, Liz, that's really a really good question, and I don't have an easy answer. It really takes will, and it takes a willingness to change and to say it's no longer about me as the teacher, but I'm going to focus on them as the students. And you know, there are probably some built-in things in higher education with tenure and pressure to publish and pressure to research that make it difficult for a faculty member to do that, to concentrate more on the students, to be more student focused. I mean no disrespect to my colleagues in higher education, but you know, we talk a lot about change, and my wife came across a quote some time ago that, you know, everybody wants progress, but nobody wants change. We get so embedded in, you know, in what we do and how we do it that, you know, I have sort of cynically talked about the change that was required for us and our faculty as we went to this more immersive model. And you know, I made fun of sort of the, you know, these dazzling PowerPoint presentations that that faculty have, and you know, they've got the lecture notes and the jokes just in the right place, and you've got to be able to, you got to be willing to set that aside. It takes a great deal of professional humility to set that aside and say, no, this is going to be a student focused experience. It's not about me as a teacher, and despite all my maybe wonderful stories to tell, it's not about me as a teacher, it's about them as the student. And that's hard. That's a big paradigm shift. And the larger the institution, the more difficult it is because of the diversity of the faculty. I know of an institution in the Midwest that started, this was now a number of years ago, but they started a new degree program. I took, when I was in an administrative role at BYU Idaho, I took a couple of groups of faculty there to see what they were doing, because they were doing some amazing things and much sort of much like this. It was a very much of an interdisciplinary program that they were starting up. And they, the faculty that were hired by this university in this program, were all hired from around the country and other institutions because they could not find faculty within the system, a rather large public system. They could not find faculty who were willing to teach and structure a curriculum in the way that this new program wanted to do it. So they had to go hire new people. They couldn't find any in the system. So they scoured the country for people who were willing to sort of set aside the standard trappings of higher education and academia and all that sort of thing to say, we're going to be very student focused. And it was an amazing program, and continues to be an amazing program. But it was because people had the will and the desire to change. And boy, you know, how, if somebody could figure out how to do that, they'd make a lot of money in the consulting realms, I think, of higher education and any place else, as well.
You know, I got to be honest, Liz, I thought right when Bruce said that he's got a background in instructional design, that the two of you were going to be just going at it on the technology side.
This is, it's fascinating because people sometimes try to pin me down and say, well, what's the technology that will make the classroom more interactive? Give me your top tech. And I always say, it's the faculty. The faculty needs to let the student be engaged, and the faculty needs to really, it's always like the guide on the side. It's like, you don't want to be the sage on the stage, just kind of preaching and kind of talking to the student. You really want to let the student direct the action and let the student be an active part. So I love that analogy. I'm going to, with Bruce's permission, because I don't want to plagiarize, I'm going to use that analogy of the receipts in the shoebox, because I love the idea of the student jumping in and becoming the guide for their own education and creating knowledge. It's so important.
Yeah, I could give you another example. In a leadership class, students walk into a leadership class and they're told, welcome to your life as a leader. You know, you're going to immerse yourself in leadership this semester, and what you become as a leader is up to you, and how you learn about leadership is up to you, how you demonstrate leadership is up to you. So what are you going to do to create an immersive experience for yourselves to become leaders? And then they're up on their feet, they're at a whiteboard, they're taking notes, and they're crafting this experience. Now, we're very much in control of the outcomes, but in this class, there's no syllabus. Students create the syllabus. You know, in counsel and in collaboration with the teacher, you know, the outcomes are very clear, and we don't compromise the outcomes. But how those outcomes are achieved, totally student driven. And it's an amazing thing to witness.
That's awesome.
So what's next for Ensign College, Bruce? What's the goal? Oh, sorry, that's my, from time to time here as I record from home, when somebody leaves the house, my garage door notifies me that somebody is leaving. That's the work from home life we have. What's the goal for Ensign College now? I mean, you have the funding that you need. You've now entering the advanced degree market, which with bachelor degrees, is it to scale bachelors? Is it to craft and hone your messaging at the associate and certificate level? Talk to me about, you know, the goals.
Yeah. So 2021 for us is really going to be a year of execution. I've jokingly said it's either execute or be executed, but that's we're not going to take that kind of approach with people. But we've really got to get
Bruce, if I could interrupt, that's what Liz tells me before every episode. I'm just saying it.
Exactly.
You know, I have been the president of Ensign College since April of 2017, and we've kind of taken the institution down to its very foundations in terms of the way we do our work. Our purpose as an institution has not changed. You know, applied education has not changed, and building students to be the very best. But the way we go about our work has been very different. We are developing more of our curriculum for online delivery. But it really now is an implementation season for us going forward. We no longer, and to me, this is a blessing and a luxury. We don't have to answer big strategic questions anymore, at least right now, like, you know, these things that we're doing, the bachelor's degrees, the name change, more online curriculum. These things were things that I began working on almost from day one of my tenure now, almost 4 years ago. And so now we've got those big strategic questions answered. Will our name change? Yes. Will we offer bachelor's degrees? Yes. Will we do more online? Yes. And now it's really about our messaging. It's about executing. And, I was asked a question when I was presenting to our board of trustees on the proposal to offer bachelor's degrees. I was asked a question by one of the officers of the board whether or not our students would be able to go to graduate school afterwards, after they finished with us with a bachelor's degree. And before I could answer that question, one of the other officers of the board said, oh, yes, they will, because your Bachelor of Applied Science degrees will be the best in the country. And so that's kind of our marching orders, is to have a curriculum and experience for our students that, you know, is as good as we can possibly make it. And now it's really about getting after it and getting all these things in place. The accreditors, our degrees, our bachelor's degrees are accredited. there, all of that stuff is done. So we're ready to go right now. You know, it will be part of our 2021-2022 catalog when we officially begin offering the bachelor's degrees, but they're accredited, they're recognized. And so now it's just, okay, let's go do the things that we, you know, that we got permission to do and do them really, really well. And so that's our 2021 and beyond.
Liz, you want to give him the final two? I say that, but she's probably asking you questions while she's on mute.
Okay. Yeah, the catchphrase, right? You're on mute for 2020. So I had to quickly get myself off of mute. But we really thank you for your time as a fellow instructional designer. I've really been fascinated by everything you've said about the student experience being central and how you've really geared your programs and been so intuitive into what your students really need to be successful. So we appreciate all of your insights. We want to be respectful of your time as well. And thank you again for joining us. But we have a last couple of wrap-up questions for you. Just if there's anything else that maybe we didn't talk about that you want to maybe share with us about your institution, and you've really shared a lot with us, but if it is anything that we didn't get a chance to talk about, and then also what you see as the future of higher education.
Yeah, you know, I would just say, as far as our institution is concerned, it's a great place. It's a very diverse group of students because of the international population that we have. It's one of the things that I love the most. I've had the opportunity to live 5 years of my life in Latin America. And so the fact that there are a lot of students from Latin America is something that personally I love. Gives me an opportunity to try to keep my Spanish somewhat current. But it's a great place to get an education. And Salt Lake City is a great place to live. We would welcome, even though we are a faith-based institution, we consider ourselves an open invitation institution where we welcome anyone of any faith that wants to come and have an experience the way that we offer it at Ensign College. As far as the future of higher education is concerned, if we've learned anything in 2020, it's that we must be flexible. We must be adaptable. And, I don't like to use the term new normal. I just, you know, I'm not sure there was an old normal necessarily, let alone a new normal. But I think that there are certainly, you know, there are some challenging days ahead. And I think institutions, the elite institutions will probably continue to do okay because they're elite and there's demand. But I think, certainly if you look at what's happened over the last decade or so, particularly with small private institutions like ours, they've been a disappearing breed. And so if we were just a private institution and didn't have the funding and the backing that we do, I'm not sure we could weather this storm either. So I think that institutions have to look at why they exist, what they do, and how they really add value. And they're competing for the educational dollar, and they've got to show people that that they're adding value. But I think there are some challenging times ahead.
Yeah, well, so I think all that makes a lot of sense. I will say, and I wanted to point out one last time your point about why the first day of school doesn't look like the first day of a job, or the way that you said that. I thought that was really one of the most important things anyone has brought up in all the 100-something episodes we've done.
Yes.
When it comes to higher ed, and the fact that you're tackling that very specific issue says a lot about your foresight, because I think the line between business / industry and higher ed is going to continue to blur until it becomes very integrated. And so I think that you're at the forefront of that. So thank you for bringing that up.
Hope you enjoyed that episode. To learn more about the EdUp Experience, please visit edupexperience.com. And if you want to be in on the live recordings, please sign up for our email list. Go to edupexperience.com and sign up to be a subscriber. We'll let you know how you can listen live and get the scoop before anyone else. So please always feel free to share this podcast, rate, review, and subscribe. We would really appreciate that. You've been listening to the EdUp Experience, where we make education your business.